Du hører på Bak nyhetene, og dette en spesialutgave sydd sammen av to episoder som vi publiserte våren 2025, og som like aktuell I dag. Det Tuva Jordfall som intervjuet tidligere byråkrat I Trump-administrasjonen Miles Taylor.
There were a lot of reasons to feel frustrated inside the Trump administration, but the thing that caused it all to come tumbling down in my mind was a very personal thing. Is I was on the way to Australia for a meeting of Western countries, the Five Eyes intelligence community, America's closest intelligence partners. And when I was on the way over to Australia, one of my mentors passed away, Senator John McCain. And he was a Republican that was one of the few Republicans in the first Trump administration to constantly stand up to the president. And so I was sort of grieving his death on the way to Australia. And then I get to the hotel, and in the middle of the night, I get this phone call from the White House. And I'm told that the president wants to raise the American flags back up. So to give you context, anytime a U.S. senator dies, all the flags across the country are at half staff in honor of that person. And Donald Trump so hated John McCain that he wanted to actively dishonor him by forcing people to put the flags back up to the top. And I get this phone call in the middle of the night in my hotel room, and I'm stunned because it's like a bad man is dancing on the grave of a good one, and not just a good one, someone who had been a mentor to me. And it may be more detailed than people want, but I popped out of bed in my boxers and I went over to the hotel room desk and I just started writing. And at first I thought it would be a journal entry. And I was just writing about how bad this administration was from the inside, the president's inclination towards illegality, but also just his unethical nature, like the John McCain episode. Mm-hmm. And somewhere as I was writing, I decided, why am I just keeping this to myself? These are things that the actual voters should understand are happening. And before I could talk myself out of it, I shot a note to a friend at the New York Times and said, I think I might want to say something from inside the administration. And then it went from there.
Hmm. Wow. Would you say the flag thing, is that typical Trump?
It's typical Trump. But very atypical. In fact, I don't think there's a single example in American history of a president saying, you know, I didn't like that guy, so let's dishonor him by putting the flags back up. Mm. And that really just hit me in a personal way, but it's so indicative of the type of man that he is. And like I said, there were bigger reasons to turn against Donald Trump in that window. Far more egregious decisions than that. But when it got that personal for me, I realized there's no hoping that this thing is going to somehow get better and that we're going to right the ship. In fact, there's very little standing between us and the president abusing his power for personal gain.
Og McCain, han var en republikansk senator fra Arizona, og en av de få som turte å kritisere Trump. Og det var Trumps mangel på respekt I å nekte å ha flaggene på halv stang da McCain døde, som fikk dråpen til å renne over for Taylor.
Yes, og han skrev først som anonym, som nevnt, men han skjønte at han måtte stå frem etter hvert, og at han da kom til å bli «hunted forever», som han sier, altså forfulgt for alltid egentlig. Fordi allerede da han skrev den kronikken anonymt, så skrev Trump på Twitter «treason», som han sier «landsforræderi», altså Elin, det som folk ble skutt for I Norge etter krigen.
Vi skal høre ham fortelle om det.
When the opinion piece published, the first thing that Donald Trump said was that he tweeted out a 7-letter tweet in all caps, and it said treason.
Yeah.
And to him, criticism from within his own ranks was treasonous, right?
What is that?
Well, it's the highest crime you can be charged with in the United States. Treason means you've gone against the nation, and it's a crime by law that's punishable by death. So the president of the United States, after I published criticism of his handling of the presidency, accused me of doing a crime punishable by death. And in some ways, ironically, he was proving my point. And my point was that this man is unfit for office and he's violating the guardrails of democracy. And his response was to criticize protected speech, free speech, by saying it was treasonous. But I knew he wouldn't stop until he found me and until he could find a way to exact revenge against me. And it's one of the things that I went on to warn about more publicly, is that if he was reelected, he would turn the presidency into a revenge machine. And he would use the powers of government to try to go after his enemies, myself included. And of course, he lost in 2020, and that didn't happen. But as soon as he won again in 2024, the wheels in his mind started turning. How can I go after my enemies? And that's exactly what he's done. He's brought the full force of the federal government after myself and other people who criticized him.
You received death threats at a point. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah. One of the things that I didn't anticipate thoroughly enough was the degree to which Donald Trump supporters would come out of the woodwork and threaten me. And not just me, but my extended family members. When I unmasked myself and came forward and claimed credit for the anonymous opinion pieces against Donald Trump, I got hate mail. I got phone calls threatening to kill me. I received very, very graphic and vile emails. But what I hadn't anticipated is that my brothers and sisters, my nieces and nephews would get the same thing. So much so, I mean, there were Trump supporters who were sending photos outside of my sister's house and posting pictures of my niece in the den watching television to threaten in a not so subtle way that if I didn't shut up, something terrible would happen to them.
Random supporters?
Random supporters, people I'd never met in my life. Some of them are still under investigation. We had stalkers that crossed the line legally and who we had to report to federal authorities. We had to move, you know, out of our home. I moved to a, you know, place outside of Washington, D.C. that exists under someone else's name because we were getting doxxed. You know, my location was being revealed as I went to different places. And there was a period of time for several months where I had an armed security detail because authorities were so worried about the threats that they anticipated one of those Trump supporters might come and just try to shoot me. And so I had an armed guard everywhere I went during the day and at nighttime. And then in addition to that, they recommended that I keep a firearm in the safe house that I was staying in. So God forbid if something happened to the security detail outside, that, you know, my protection of last resort would be this Sig Sauer P365 pistol that I kept with me right in my bed. That has a psychological impact on you, for sure.
Why is what you were doing so scary to people that they actually have to go to that length to threaten to kill you?
I think when you are in deep, deep denial of the truth, you'll do anything to keep that truth alive. Your truth alive, even if that means killing, in this case, literally, the real truth. And in this case, Trump supporters fervently did not want to believe that Donald Trump was corrupt, that he was acting in his own self-interest. So many of them wanted to believe what he said, that he was their savior, that he was, in his words, their retribution, that he was the answer to anything in their lives they were unhappy about. And to be told that that's not true, to be told who the man really is sort of a violation of their sense of self. How could they be so fooled and deceived all of these years? And for some people, that makes them so mad to want to commit an act of violence, to say, you are a liar, you are a traitor, there's no way that could be true. To me, it was indicative of the broader state of dissent in our country. Is speaking out has become a very dangerous thing in the United States.
USA har blitt ondsinnet, ifølge Taylor.
Ja, og han fortalte meg også at I løpet av den første presidentperioden til Trump så gikk dødstrusler mot kongressmedlemmer fra 900 til 10.000. Altså en tidobling første gang Trump var president. Og nå det, skal vi tro, Taylor langt farligere. Altså I Bergen så hadde han med kona og deres 8 måneder gamle baby, og de koste seg altså så fælt. Det var jo strålende vær og kirsebærblomstring og de hvite husene I åsen opp til fløyen der, vet du. Men viktigst av alt for denne lille familien, det var at de for første gang på en stund følte seg trygge. De var frie mennesker. Og det ganske sykt å tenke på, det altså amerikanere som kritiserer en folkevalgt president. Og for det her så altså han, altså Taylor, han da fiende av Trump, som pusser på ham sine tilhengere, så de ønsker å drepe han. Og, Elin, ikke nok med det, nå han faktisk også under etterforskning.
Det snakker vi mer om etter en kort pause nå.
Vi straks tilbake.
Du hører på Bak nyhetene, en spesialutgave der Momentums Tuva snakker med Trump-varsler Miles Taylor, som skal til å fortelle om etterforskningen som presidenten har beordret på denne mannen som han har kalt landsforreder.
It's exactly the situation that I warned about. This is what I spent years trying to tell the American people, is that if Donald Trump came back, he would weaponize the tools of the American presidency to go after his rivals. And that's exactly what's happening right now. In fact, the executive order he put out against me is the first time in American history that a president has issued an order to investigate a personal rival for speaking out against him, ever. That's never happened in the history of our country. And I mean, I think he's doing it for obvious reasons, is he wants to send a message. He wants to send a message that if you criticize the president of the United States, your life will be ruined. And from our perspective, my wife and I and our family, if we let that happen, we create a really dangerous situation for anyone that comes after us. Mm-hmm. If we just bow down and accept that, then it becomes very, very easy to use that tactic and threat to get people to do whatever you want. And it's extraordinary to even say those words. We're not talking about the Stasi or Eastern Europe during the Cold War. We're talking about the United States of America that at one point was considered the paragon of free speech. And now there are folks like me who are fearing not just for their freedom, but potentially for their lives because they've criticized the president.
What law? It might be a stupid question, but what law does it refer to?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Because I don't know the answer. That is how chilling this is.
So he can prosecute without having a...
He can investigate without having a specific crime he thinks I've committed. That's what's so extraordinary about this to us, is that we believe currently there are federal investigators turning through every aspect of our lives. And it's already upended our lives. We've had to leave our jobs and change everything just because we've been blacklisted by the White House. Now, the president has alleged that I committed espionage. Okay, that means I stole classified information from the government to go reveal it. First of all, I did not. Second of all, it's really ironic to have him make that allegation because of the mountains of classified information he allegedly left the White House with himself. I would never be that stupid to do something like that. And yet, without any evidence, he's made that claim that somehow that's the crime I've committed, and therefore I must be investigated. That should really scare people, that there's no one to stop the president of the United States from just making false allegations about crimes and then launching into investigations of those people's lives. And as I've learned through this process just the past few weeks, there's very little that can stop him from bringing charges. If he wants to, he can bring charges. Now, they may not be good charges. They may fail in court. And we're very confident that we would win in any case against the president. But the fact that he can go there without any of the guardrails of democracy stopping him shouldn't just be a worry for my family. It should be a worry for any American who would dare to criticize the president.
I have so many questions. I mean, we're all kind of scared. So first of all, you don't seem very scared. Why is that? And how dangerous is he? How scared should we all be?
Yeah. Look, to me personally, I would say, I think it's important to put on a face of defiance because it sends a signal. If we run scared and act scared, and if my family doesn't respond, if I don't respond, then it looks like this tactic works. It looks like he can just cow people into silence. So to me, it's really important, even though it probably is detrimental to me in the long run, to be out there talking about this, shining a light on how truly insane this is from a legal perspective, a constitutional perspective, a moral perspective. But how scared should we be? We should be terrified that an American president is doing this. I mean, my wife and I weren't sure we were even going to be allowed to board a plane to travel over here to Norway. We've been waking up every morning anticipating that there will be a raid on our house. We had to update our last will and testament to name a guardian for our daughter because we are worried that this could end very badly and that something could happen to the two of us. That's every day that we're worried about our actual lives. That's how serious it is, but it's not about me. It goes so far beyond that because all it took was someone typing up an order at the White House and the president signing it with a pen. That's how easy it was to cause a family with a small baby to run and fear for their lives and lose their livelihood and be uncertain about the future. It was easy. And if we don't make it harder for them, they will use that technique again and again against anyone that would be considered the president's enemies. And that, to me, sets a really scary precedent, not just in America, but anywhere in the Western world, that a leader might have autocratic tendencies, as if they think it's easy to go after their rivals, they'll do it.
Makes me so furious. And I know a lot of people, they just feel kind of lost. But what can we do? What can I do? Well,
two things. First, I think folks need to wake up. We keep telling ourselves it's not as bad as it looks. It's not as bad as it looks. I'm here to tell you it's worse than it looks. The United States is in a much darker place than people realize. And Donald Trump is not going to soften his message or check himself. It's going to get darker. And I think people aren't prepared for that. But I've spent the past 7 years telling people the sky is falling. And now I think a lot of folks feel like, oh yeah, the sky is falling. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Donald Trump will likely defy judicial orders. He will go past whatever guardrails people think still exist, and it will get worse. So that's step one, is people need to be very cold, hard, realistic about how scary the situation is and how little will stop this man from blowing past the democratic norms in the United States. But the second thing that people can do is the hard thing of standing up and actually speaking out against it. And I specifically mean Western governments are very afraid right now to criticize what they're seeing in the United States. Why? Because Donald Trump has shown them he can do the same thing that he's doing to me. Is he can gain leverage over them and threaten them with things like tariffs, with things like shutting off intelligence collaboration. There's all sorts of tools that he can use. And if America's allies let him do that, then the tactic will work. And they will silence leaders from holding America to account. What this administration needs more than anything is for Western governments to stand up to it and say, look, this is unacceptable. That is unacceptable. You can't destroy the post-World War order that we built together to protect the West. And you can't do that unilaterally. You can't undercut NATO. You can't turn against your allies without consequences. And so far, I don't think most Western governments have done that. There's a great deal of fear about what Donald Trump could do. And we need there to be someone to stand up to the administration. Otherwise, I think at the back end of these 4 years, the Western world's going to look very, very different because Donald Trump has no interest in preserving it. He does not believe in NATO. He does not believe in democracy as the ultimate end state of a polity. He doesn't think that's where we should end up. His inclination is to be friends with autocrats. His inclination is that a president should be all powerful. His instincts are all contrary.
On a citizen level, so what we can do is to support the politicians that we know will stand up against him.
I think on the citizen level, people need to tell their governments, don't cave to this administration. We're with you. Because I think leaders in a lot of European governments are worried that if they stand up to Trump and then their country is hit with tariffs or punishment from the United States, well, then the people will be upset and say, why did you put us in this situation where, you know, the price of American whiskey is now higher? Why did you put us in this situation where our economy is not as good? So it starts with people signaling to their governments, no, no, we understand there might be consequences to standing up against America. And for them to be okay with that and to say, we get it, but we would prefer our governments aren't threatened by Washington into doing things or accepting things we otherwise wouldn't accept. I think if leaders in European governments hear that, they'll have stiffer spines in standing up to what we've already seen as egregious behavior on the part of the president. And just as an example, would be how Donald Trump has handled Ukraine and the total humiliation that he has put upon the leadership of Ukraine and the willingness to treat it like some sort of real estate deal that he's doing, that he's trying to exact concessions for mineral rights from Ukraine. He's trying to make money off of the plight and the deaths of Western citizens who are fighting for their lives. He's trying to make money off of that. No leader in NATO, no leader in the West should accept that. They should be not just telling the White House in private how egregious that is. They should be publicly protesting against Donald Trump's mishandling of this situation in Ukraine. But we're not seeing as much of that because I think a lot of leaders are afraid of upsetting Donald Trump. And this is, again, it's a much larger example of what I'm dealing with personally. You know, Donald Trump said something one time when I was in the Oval Office. He told a group of us that when he was in business, he learned that if you threaten to sue someone, they won't take you seriously. They'll go psh, and wave their hand and say, go ahead, threaten to sue me. And they'll keep doing the thing that you don't want them to do. But if you actually sue them, whether you have a case against them or not, they will so fear the process of the lawsuit that they will settle with you and they'll do what you want. That story he told us has been very instructive to me about everything he does. Donald Trump doesn't just want to threaten people. He wants to sue them so they settle with him. It's why he's actually investigating my family, is he wants us to reach the conclusion that we should just shut up and not criticize him. And it's why he's put tariffs on the entire world, because he knows it gives him leverage and that people will come to heel and they'll do what he wants. That lesson that he allegedly learned in business is now how he's running what was once the freest country in the world.
Is he smart?
No, not traditionally. He's just blunt and he's willing to do anything to get his way. I don't consider him by any stretch an intelligent man. In fact, I think he's one of the most ill-informed, unintelligent people I've ever met in my entire life. I mean, we could barely brief him on anything complicated and get him to pay attention for more than a minute. In fact, we used to cut memos down from 50-page memos down to a picture on a single piece of paper because he wouldn't read. I don't know if he can read. And I don't even say that jokingly. Is the man, we couldn't get him to focus or pay attention. So I think in a traditional sense, he's one of the least informed, most unintelligent people I've ever met in my entire life. And that also makes him one of the most dangerous people that I've ever met in my entire life.
Does he believe that he is doing good things?
Donald Trump is more convinced of his own rectitude and his own righteousness than anyone I know. He thinks he's the greatest president in American history. When he says that, you have to take him seriously. I remember in the first term, Donald Trump would often compare himself to Ronald Reagan and Abraham Lincoln. And I thought that that was sort of absurd at the time when he would say, I'm more popular than Abraham Lincoln. First of all, there weren't polls back then. And how do you know? And second of all, of course, you're not more popular than Abraham Lincoln. And now I don't know if I'm right about that, because the American people, despite all of the evidence that they had, that Donald Trump would threaten the foundations of our republic, still reelected him. And so in some ways, he may be closer to right than me about how popular he is, but he is very convinced he's the savior of the United States. He has these delusions of grandeur about it. And in his mind, nothing should stop him from doing what he wants.
Vi straks tillbaka.
How did it feel to be in his administration and seeing this and kind of getting how scary and how dangerous it could be and try to speak up and just realizing that most Americans just didn't get it?
Immensely frustrating. I mean, I think on a personal level, it was really disappointing to see so many people I looked up to in Washington in private say the same things that I eventually said publicly. In private, to say, this man is terrifying, this man is a threat to the foundations of our republic. But then for those same people in public to go out and praise Donald Trump and thank him for his extraordinary leadership and thank him for being the greatest president. That to me was really personally disappointing, to see all of these figures that as a young man in Washington, I'd looked up to self-immolate in front of the American people by saying something different about what they knew to be true. What that's done is that sort of attitude, that sort of complicity has allowed Donald Trump to thrive. And so I knew in turning against that, it would have a lot of consequences for me because I didn't have a lot of air cover. I mean, I would say at the time after I came forward, who the hell is Miles Taylor? Who the hell am I? I wasn't a household name. I wasn't who people were expecting to be anonymous. They were hoping for some famous person in Washington to lead the charge, to ride in on a horse. But it ended up having to be me, a bureaucrat, a functionary, because those people who should have rode in on the horse were too scared to. They said all those things in private, but they were too scared that it would blow up their lives. And you know what? In a sense, they were right. It would have blown up their lives because it did to me. More people need to be willing to do it. And if they're not, then the people like me will end up in jail cells. They'll end up hounded by stalkers. And that's the country that we will live in.
Is there a resistance within right now?
Within the Trump administration? Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. I don't think that there are enough people checking the extraordinarily egregious impulses of this president. There were in the first term, at least for the first part of it, there were a lot of people who pushed back. And when I used the term resistance in the original opinion piece, I made very clear that it wasn't the resistance of the political left. I wasn't defying the lawful orders of the president of the United States. If he told us to do something that was consistent with the law, we weren't secretly conspiring to defy him. We were a resistance preventing the president from doing illegal things, things he wasn't allowed to do under the Constitution, but that he wanted to do all the time. That sort of resistance, as far as I can tell, does not exist in the second Trump administration. There are not cabinet members that are preventing him from doing these things. And we know that because he is carrying out orders that are being challenged in the courts as illegal, up to and including orders to investigate private citizens for publicly critiquing him. I can't think of something more clearly unconstitutional. And yet he was able to do it. And it will probably take us years to fight that in the courts.
On stage, you told an anecdote or a story about someone who kind of shared your opinion on things, but he told you something about him having to keep in mind the audience he was talking to.
Yeah.
Could you tell that story?
Yeah. There were a lot of people during the Trump administration who behind the scenes, I thought, shared my views of the danger that the president posed. In fact, I would say at least half of his cabinet, the senior most members of the Trump administration, felt like he was a danger to the country, which is extraordinary, that the president's own people thought he was very, very dangerous and potentially needed to be replaced. And yet, a lot of those people, when forced to stake out a position publicly, retreated from those views and instead praised the president. And one of those was someone who used to be a very close friend, is one of the other leaders at the Department of Homeland Security that I worked with was a man named Chad Wolf. We went to a lot of these meetings with the president together. We saw the same things. We had the same views of the danger that the president posed to the country. And yet, after I left the administration, Chad was elevated to be the acting head of Homeland Security. And I let him know just before I went public against the president that I was going to do that. And he said to me, well, look, keep my name out of your mouth and I'll keep yours out of mine. In other words, I could go criticize the president and he would just stay silent as the head of Homeland Security. The week after that, when I came forward against Trump and I unmasked myself and said I was anonymous, that very same week, Chad went and appeared next to the president of the United States and said, Miles Taylor had never criticized Donald Trump. It's egregious that he's doing this. And he roundly condemned me and he stood by the president. And that to me was very illustrative of how contagious cowardice actually is. That someone who had so clearly seen the danger Donald Trump posed made a choice to stand next to that dangerous man and criticize one of his close friends. It showed how easily people can be overtaken by fear and cowardice. And to this day, I think Chad Wolf, who continues to fawn over the president publicly, I think he still believes privately that the man is a danger to the fabric of our republic. But he is scared to speak out. He's scared about what might happen to his family if he does it. And he has reason to be.
Yeah, with good reasons. Did you speak to him about that?
After that, I sent him a message and I said, I thought we had an agreement. And he said, look, I've got an audience that I need to cater to on this end. And he meant an audience of one. He meant he had to make sure the president was not upset with him. But that story, that example, I've seen 1,000 times in Washington of people publicly debasing themselves because they're fearful about what might happen if they tell the truth.
We kind of felt that when recently, I don't know if you know, but recently the prime minister and the foreign affairs minister, no, the finance minister, sorry, they went over there and met him. And a lot of people were kind of disappointed they didn't confront him more. But I think that might be the thing that you're saying. They were afraid that they would, you know, it seems very easy to trigger him. And also, I think, but I don't know, and I would love your view on, I think they are trying to kind of keep a good tone, so because it gets even worse if they can't even talk to him.
Mm-hmm. This is what I would compare it to, is the situation, whether it's for individuals standing up to Donald Trump or nations, is very similar to having an alcoholic parent or an abusive partner. People act the same way, is they know that he's irascible. They know he's dangerous. They know he could hit them at a moment's notice. And so they're trying to reach a sort of detente with him to keep the drunk parent from being angry or retributive while still preserving their ability to survive. And at some point, whether you have an alcoholic parent or you're in an abusive relationship, at some point, enough is enough and you realize you have to put yourself first. And I think countries are in different phases of that with Donald Trump right now. But anyone who's ever been in a relationship like that or a situation like that knows almost always they stay far too long. They wait far too long and then the worst happens. And it's the same with Donald Trump, is if you don't stand up to him sooner, then he's going to get you to do things that you would have never imagined doing. He'll get you to accept behavior you would never imagine accepting if you continue to stay in that cycle. It is an abuse cycle. And I think it's really important for leaders. I think it's important for countries to think about that, is by lording these threats over European governments, Donald Trump will steadily try to get them to accept things they would never accept. Peace agreements in Ukraine that perhaps won't look like real peace, accommodation with the Chinese government that they maybe never would have agreed to. In slow gradations, he will get us all to abdicate our values by lording those threats over us. And that's something that's, I think, very important for governments to think about early in his term.
Do you think they should speak more clearly their views to
him? I do. Yeah. I do.
And though it will look like Zelensky and Trump.
Well, and I think privately, nowhere have we seen more extraordinary bravery in that regard than Zelensky. Is no one had more to lose of any European government than Zelensky. Literally the life of his country and the lives of his people depended on him not standing up to Donald Trump and just accepting whatever deal Donald Trump gave him, just saying, yes, sir, I'll do whatever you want. No one had a greater incentive to do that. And yet that man had extraordinary courage to say, how you're treating me is unacceptable. How you're treating me is humiliating. If European leaders don't show that type of courage, they don't deserve to have their offices.
Snart skal vi blant annet høre hva godt Miles Taylor mener kan komme ut av at Donald Trump president.
This is so interesting because, you know, we see this all the time from the European point of view and or the European medias. And I actually, for a while, I was under the impression that European medias made it worse because I was in the US during the election and everybody I talked to, even, you know, people from my profession and everything, they would say that, yeah, you know, he's not great, but still he's the best option and he's strong. He will defend us and stuff like that. And I was like, maybe it's not that bad. And I came back to Europe and it was like, you know, really, the headlines were like, okay, the world will now, you know, go under.
But I mean, I would say that it is worse than the European headlines would suggest. And I say that as a lifelong Republican and a conservative. This is just the tip of the iceberg. What we are seeing with Donald Trump right now and his behavior is not going to get better. He's realizing and he knows there is nothing to stop him from doing some of the more extraordinary things he might do, deploying U.S. troops in American streets, you know, denying aid to Democratic, states and governments because they don't support him, breaking NATO, going on and on. There's nothing to stop him. There isn't. And it would be foolish for European governments and populations to think that some hero is going to rise out of the American bureaucracy and prevent him. For the next 3.5 years, he'll do what he wants and it will get more and more galling. And I think that's important for folks to understand, not just in terms of how to handle the Trump presidency, but how to think about the future. It really pains me to say this. I consider myself a very patriotic American, but contemporaries need to think of this moment like the fall of Rome. They do. It is happening. These are the trend lines you would see if the most powerful polity in the world was starting to crumble and abdicate its responsibilities. And if you know you're a student of history and you look at the fall of Rome, well, it didn't happen overnight. It happened over multiple leaders, but the warning signs were there. we are seeing the same hallmarks in Washington. I say that because if you knew at the time, 2,000 years ago, that Rome was going to fall and you were one of Rome's protectorates, what would you have done? You would have fortified your independence. You would have built your own resilience and autonomy. You would have built up your own military. You would have stopped depending on that leadership regime. Unfortunately, I think that's what needs to happen for a lot of America's partners. They need to hedge and they need to prepare for a world in which they're no longer defended by America, whether that's verbally or morally, or whether that's America's literal nuclear umbrella to protect them. I think they should anticipate they're going to be in our lifetimes living in a world in which they cannot depend on U.S. support, whether, again, whether they're attacked in a trade dispute or whether they're invaded by Moscow. They cannot anticipate that the United States will live up to its obligations to protect. And to me, that's deeply depressing. But people need to be very realistic about that. Otherwise, they could find themselves next year or years from now in a much more dire situation.
Me and other people who love the States, should we go? Because a lot of people are canceling their plans to go to the United States. What is best for, you know, the United States right now?
You know, I would have said, just after Trump was reelected, even I would have said, you know, don't cancel your plans to come to America. You know, come visit the United States and appreciate what an extraordinary country it is. But there are now literal risks for people coming and visiting the United States. The administration has ratcheted up the ability to search through the electronic devices, the baggage, the anything that a foreigner brings into the country, and they are doing that. And they have weaponized visas, the permission slip you get into the country, whether it's students or tourists. They are using the possibility of immediate deportation as a way to punish people that they don't like. We've seen this with lawyers who are a part of cases against the administration. They'll go on vacation with their families and come back into the United States and have their computers searched, their devices searched. This is something we've never seen ever in the United States. And it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking, well, that's not really happening. Or maybe that's just happening to a handful of people. No, this is happening to thousands of people now. I mean, just students in the United States, foreign students are terrified that one wrong move will cause their life to be destroyed, their university relationship canceled, and they'll be deported from the United States. But this goes all the way back to what I said Donald Trump told us in the Oval Office, is that if you don't get leverage over someone, they won't do what you want. And he sees things like a visa as leverage over someone. And who would want to visit that country? I would be mortified to go visit a country where I knew what I said, what I did, what I posted on social media could potentially in an instant be used by authorities to deport me, to humiliate me, to search through my devices. That's what we would expect in a police state. But it's now a very credible worry in the United States.
But doesn't it hurt you if you guys, if we stay away and try and just protect our own little...
No.
You
know, it sends a message.
Yeah.
It sends a message. If people are scared to come over to your house because they think your house is dangerous, that helps you wake up. And I think the American people need to see that. They need to know people are scared to come over because of how quickly this has devolved. You should not have to worry when you go visit a fellow Western democracy that they're going to search you and search your social media and try to humiliate you and find some way to get leverage over you. That should never be a concern, but you know, it does now have the hallmarks of the Stasi in Eastern Germany. And that's not hyperbolic. That's not an overstatement. I'm telling folks, that's the reality of where America's headed right now.
And last question, this can sound very strange, but in this podcast, we always try to find some hope, even when there's little, you know. So what good can come from Trump being America's president?
I would describe myself as an optimistic fatalist. That sounds very philosophical. What I mean by that is I believe, as a fatalist would, that nature destroys everything it creates. It will eventually destroy me and this room that we're sitting in and this democracy and Western civilization. All of those things will eventually fall. It is inevitable. But I'm an optimist in the sense that nature also creates from everything it's also destroyed. Why is that relevant to the situation we are in? Well, even the most destructive presidency, even the darkest situation, can result in the reconstitution of the things that really matter to us. And what I think the Trump presidency is going to do is it's going to shock us into realizing that we have veered from the things that we value, the people that we value, democratic norms, and hopefully will cause us on the back end to want to reconstitute those things better. If NATO falls because of this, hopefully on the back end, we'll want to rebuild a better NATO. If America's democracy ends up in demise, hopefully Americans will want to reconstitute America either in some different form or renegotiation of the Constitution, something to bring it back better. There's always that prospect, but it usually first requires a very, very difficult and painful reminder. And we're now in that period of reminding.
Dette var en spesialutgave bak nyhetene, et intervju med Miles Taylor, som også ligger ute I en lengre versjon I 2 episoder hvis du har lyst å høre mer. Det var Tuva Jordfall som møtte Miles Taylor våren 2025, og denne episoden klippet sammen av Tom Normann.